Kid Nikki, Radical Ninja. Data East brings you arcade realism at home. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
And today we are talking about Kid Nikki the Radical Ninja. A huge emphasis on rad there. They really
Radical.
Play that. But rad specifically, because they play up like these yes. 80s buzzwords throughout the entirety of the game. And so I just wanted everyone to know right away that even though it takes place in feudal Japan, this is definitely one for like Saved by the Bell almost with the way that they do the pows and pops.
There haven't been any games released recently that have been described as like on fleek, correct?
No, that's true. In fact, I don't know if like...
People don't really say that anymore, right?
No one really says that anymore, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some Fortnite fleek reference.
Yeah,
you
like,
know?
Like a skeet it.
Yeah, that also is not something that's in right now anymore. It probably was never in. It was probably something that you have pushed as an agenda to us on the side and now managed to sneak into an episode.
All right, Mike, you're not being very yeet right now.
Joe, how are you feeling today?
You'd rather talk to me, wouldn't you?
You seem a little nicer.
I'm feeling good. I'm done playing Kid Nikki. Not that I hated it. But I'm feeling, I guess a few things to say about my personal experience about Kid Nikki.
Does anybody have like a cousin Nikki or a friend Nikki? Like
I have a friend Nikki.
You have a friend Nikki?
Someone on my bus. In
not spelled that way though.
Yeah, okay.
Nikki
on your bus. Okay.
Yeah, I wondered if this was maybe based off of her.
That's probably true.
Actually, I don't even remember if her name was Nikki. But
yeah, I just think like you know something about the title Kid Nikki. I don't even know if that part was necessary, right? Couldn't we just call this Radical Ninja?
I always, you know, it's funny because I feel like I recognize the name Radical Ninja.
No, I don't know what you could have been recognizing that from.
but Kid Nikki doesn't ring a bell.
You're thinking
at all.
Of the Ninja Turtles, who probably
that's
at one time
is.
In the 80s said radical.
That's right. What it is. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, radical's a good 80s word, right?
I associated it more with the 90s, though.
Oh, okay, interesting. I feel like we were just around in the 90s and it was
and
carrying
got, like,
over.
We got the residual radicals.
We got the residual 80s, radicals, you're right, probably.
Right. What's some other like buzzwords for that kind of stuff? So you have like radical, tubular is another one I think of.
But how many things were ever really described as tubular?
Only know. Like surf
only
moves, right?
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of surf, like cowabunga.
Cowabunga, yeah. These are all actually just happening to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Okay. Yeah. That's enough of that. We should probably get into the development of the game. Guys, this was developed by Irem. And we've gotten this wrong so many times in the past that I'd like to just set the record straight here. Irem so far has made Kung Fu, Deadly Towers, and Scoon, and that's it. Sometimes we've said 10-yard fight.
Yeah.
It's not true. It's Kung Fu, Deadly Towers, and Scoon. But Deadly Towers was Broderbund on the NES. So
true that.
They just made the Japanese version. But Irem only makes the arcade version for Kid Nikki. It was actually Data East who makes the NES port of Kid Nikki Radical Ninja.
These two giants of the industry.
Right. Well, the ones that we keep hearing over and over again, at least early on in the NES's life cycle. But if you need a little refresher on Data East, they did Breakthrough, which is not the Arkanoid clone that you
guys
are probably thinking of.
The car one where you jump.
Yes, the car one where you jump. But Joe, I don't think you played that one.
I didn't play that one, but I always think you're talking about Arkanoid when you say Breakthrough.
Well, it's because you're thinking of
Even
Breakout.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're really good at like talking about games.
Yeah, and then there's Burger Time. Data East made that one as well. Yeah. Pretty competent arcade to NES port. So maybe they could do Kid Nikki right. Karate Champ, which is terrible.
Yeah.
So nobody wants that.
So maybe they can't do Kid Nikki, right?
Maybe they can't do it, right? Then there's Ring King, which they didn't do that well at all.
No.
We didn't like that one. And that has the weird cutscene that no one's a fan of.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to say it out loud. And last but not least, Tag Team Wrestling, which really sucks.
Yes.
One of the
like
worst
a progressive
NES games
downward spiral,
right, we've ever played.
So, again, two giants of the industry.
Yes. But even though Irem made the arcade version, we're talking about the NES version today. We're not going to talk about the arcade version at all. But if that is something you're interested in, I think Earlier last year, 2020 by now. Who knows? No, I'm joking. 2018, January 25th, 2018, Kid Nicky Radical Ninja was published for the Nintendo Switch by Hamster as part of their Arcade Archive series. So it's like $7.99. You get the actual arcade version. There's like a ton of little things you can do. It's a really cool emulator, these Arcade Archives. I just wish that they were bundled rather than sold separately.
Oh, it's just one game?
Yes, and this is how it works for everything in the Arcade Archive series. So you got to really like the game for $8.
Yeah.
This isn't something you can just try. Be like, oh, I wonder what Kid Nicky's like. I'll just spend $8 on the arcade port. First impressions?
I've got a first impression.
Okay, you know, there we go. Joe, you take us through.
So when I was playing my games, my upcoming quota of games, I played Karate Kid, followed by Kid Nicky. So my initial poor reaction was, oh my God, this is so much better than Karate Kid, just because, well, it is. So after a little while, at first I was like, oh, it's so much better, pretty much mainly just because it controls decently, like, you know, it comparatively. Then after a little while, it started to wear off, and I was like, okay, this game doesn't have a ton to it, but I did find a little bit of charm to some parts of it.
Okay, Sean?
I thought that I enjoyed the sense of humor that the game had, that sort of hidden around the levels, but whether you go into there are a couple secrets that I myself didn't find, but I saw people find, that I thought, like, oh, that's cute. But the game itself, I thought, was pretty standard fare. I think there are a lot of just bland decisions that were made for this game. But yeah, that's my first impression.
And I think for me, I was getting weird vibes back to games like Chubby Cherub and what was that other one? It was a kid, not Kid Nicky, but that's the one we're talking about, but like Ninja Kid? Ninja Kid?
Ninja
Is that,
Kid?
Yeah, that was the game. Yeah. Yes. Came out around the same time as Chubby Cherub. Aesthetically, it looks like that, but they also kind of behave similar to those games.
Yeah.
You can't fly in Kid Nicky. You could in Chubby Cherub, but honestly, the flying was broken in that game, so I'm glad they didn't include flying in this one. It's a short game, but it's still kind of a chore to work through on this one, and we'll get into that in a bit, but that's my general first impressions.
Personally, I will say that for maybe this is just my experience with Chubby Cherub, but I would put this and probably Ninja Kid in a different in a maybe slightly higher section than Chubby Cherub. Cherub, I thought, was had a lot, as far as the way it plays. I think that was like a lot more of a
right there with
these.
Like Kid Icarus too, right?
Whoa! Stop!
Get out of here!
Yeah,
you get out of here.
Kid Icarus is essential, and I totally see where you're going with that, Joe. And I guess yes, I think it was just like a first impression I had.
Right,
by the time I had finished the game, I definitely didn't think like it was as bad as Chubby Cherub. If you're wondering where we stand on this, I think continue listening because we have more to say. That I don't want to communicate that it's bad off the bat because I think it's a game worth talking about. And so we're going to do just that. But first, we have to do Tales from the Manual.
Kid Nicky starts with your Kid Nicky. You are training in your dojo. And all of a sudden, a pigeon or bird of some kind comes into your dojo and is shot down with an arrow. And then it says, "We'll help you." And then you jump out and the game starts. And you go and you rescue your girlfriend, I imagine. And then you kill the, I forgot who.
The wizard?
the stone wizard.
The stone wizard.
And then the game ends.
Okay, it takes a while to get to the stone wizard. You made it seem,
there's a big chunk in between there.
I would like a game where you just like you
that's
see
the story though.
Right.
That's no story.
It's correct. Yes. You see a cutscene and it just takes you right to the final boss. You kill him and then it's like game over.
I didn't know what the heck that bird was at first either. But then I was watching a playthrough where they described
it carrier pigeon
as
it
being a carrier pigeon with a message that I assume was mistranslated and meant to say like, "Will you help?" from your girlfriend.
It may have been that. I mean, because it sort of pops up as if it's being read from a scroll or something. And I don't know. It, yeah. It's got a
it's
different
very
style.
Just thrown at you, with, yeah. Like you're like you get it right.
This is and the most throwaway of plots.
Yeah, and there seems to be a longer plot that goes around online, but I couldn't find that anywhere in the manual, so I'm not going to read that because who knows where they got that from, and
that's not necessarily
the NES version. Maybe yeah. that's like on the arcade, like on the side of the cabinet, but I don't count that as part of the NES canon.
That's true.
You know, so that's where I got the feudal Japan thing from, other than like the aesthetic, of course. But like it's actually said somewhere on this large description that like set in feudal Japan, Kid Nicky must rescue blah blah blah, you know, all that additional mm-hmm. information. Now in terms of things that are actually in the manual, I only have one note and I thought it was pretty funny. So it lists out your controls and it's like, you know, to move use these buttons, to jump use this button, and then finally it just has this start button and it just says pause, and then it goes, If you wish to interrupt play in the middle of a game, and it's almost like I read it like, sigh, if you wish to interrupt play in the middle of a game, you know, like, come on. Like, everybody's got to pause it sooner or later. It's not like they want to.
I feel like this isn't the first time that we have read a man or we have played a game with a manual that goes way into detail like that on the pause, because I feel like that was still like a new concept.
Right, so. But I feel like they're almost scolding you for doing it. Like what? You couldn't just play the whole game through? You had to pause? You can't pause in the arcade.
You're right.
That's true.
It's true.
See, I did notice that too, but I was thinking more along the lines of like, wow, it's funny that it's in here. It's like the longest description in this whole manual is like what the pause button does.
It's true. Also,
and,
like,
and it's just the way we think about it now, it's just like so obvious. But I guess if you think like not everybody was playing a ton of video games, this could be someone's first video game.
Well, I mean, for A, it says like if you wish to strike your opponent with spinning blade, press this button.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't actually say that, though.
But it might as well have.
Yes, correct.
Also, I just want to get into the lingo here of if you wish to interrupt play in the middle of a game. Do you think, like, a game was the correct choice? Like, they're referring to it almost like a round in the arcade, you know? Like they're still treating it as if, like, this is just a version of the game. Like the game is just referring to when you start to when you die, and then you restart, have another game?
Oh.
Meaning, like, another game of Kid Nicky? Like, I think Kid Nicky's almost like a tennis match.
I think they're actually talking about, like, all games. Like, if you wish to interrupt play for any game, press this button.
Yeah, this which is like isn't a public necessarily service.
It's not,
true.
It's not true, but maybe
which,
they
which game to... couldn't you pause in?
Volleyball?
Winter games, right? You had to hold it down
or
something?
Oh, yeah, you hold it down. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't, like, actually pause. And then my last thought before we move into actually talking about the gameplay is not involving the manual, but it involves the back of the box. Guys, tell me what you think of this. The back of the box shows the arcade graphics.
Okay, that's actually false advertising.
That is messed up, right? Like, it's like who could tell, right? Anybody? Yeah. Like, they're a lot nicer. Surprising.
We were just talking about them do off the mic, but actually off the mic, we were just talking about them doing that at like E3, showing false graphics. For
yeah,
their
the history of that happening in E3, like Killzone and Watch Dogs and all that stuff. So this has been rampant in the industry.
I bet you they got the idea from this game.
Yeah, they were like, well, Kid Nicky got away with it in 87, so we can do it in 2013. So now for the meat and potatoes of our NES podcast, where
so
we talk
cute.
About the gameplay. I describe Kid Nicky as Super Mario with weapons, but you know, you guys probably could describe it a little better. It's not necessarily it's a platformer / action game, right?
Sure,
there's some platforming for sure.
That's giving
there's
it too much bit, credit. Yeah. I think if you try to describe somebody that game, they would want to buy it and play it.
Super Mario with weapons, right? That's what they should have put on the back of the box.
And I'm not saying that probably was in their design doc, but I think this game is. It looks too roughshod for me to describe it as such. I would say that it is a combination between Ninja Kid and Kung Fu, because it's just that endless, like, enemies coming at you with no actual... There are a couple patterns with, like, people throwing things at you, but it seemed that in general, if there's ground combat, they're randomly generated and just run at you.
I almost feel like it's not even randomly generated. It's like generated to like a beat Like it's like generated like every 1 second another enemy will come in just.
Yeah,
forever.
This is the first rhythm game, yeah.
Right, yes. A beat is the bad word.
We did have a rhythm game, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
What's funny is this is something we talked about back in the Super Mario Brothers episode, how, like, that game programmed the enemies to exactly show up when they needed to in order to, like, make the level
make
more
level
complex.
Good.
But here, they didn't plan on doing any of that, and I really feel like this game could have benefited from that because it did put, like, some interesting death traps and, like, you know, having to climb trees at certain points and there just the option to scale things when you didn't necessarily have to. So even the fact that they gave us options but just wound up making it, like, enemies appear wherever you are, it doesn't matter. In the
And it's a shame, too, because I do think that the controls are really tight, at least for, like, whenever we have a game like this that's, like, the side-scrolling, I guess, like, somewhat of a platformer but also where you have, like, a weapon, I feel like it's, like, there's a good chance the controls are going to be really tough to manage.
I think that we've gotten past the worst parts of that,
right?
Though.
But think of just the one, Karate Kid, last week. That was a nightmare, and so maybe that's why I'm thinking of it this way. But I feel like if they had done what you guys are saying and, like, programmed it to be a little more, you know, thought out as to when the enemies are coming, this could be a really, like, more of a polished experience where you're. You know, your actions are pretty.
Yeah,
because
I want to talk about that because, you know, a lot of times we fault the games that we're playing for their controls, but I didn't think the controls were bad here. I think the attack did what it needed to do and was maybe even a little op in the early sections of the game, you know? I definitely felt like, you said it's like a swinging sword?
Spinning sword.
It's not like an actual sword. It's sort of like how in Zelda, for some reason, you have like a projectile sword, and in this one, you just have a sword that spins for like a microsecond, and then you put it back.
Right, and I just felt like it worked really well. It never, like, the hitboxes weren't confusing to me.
I will tell you when we get to it, but when it does not work very well for me, at least how they designed it for, like, boss battles.
Okay, and we'll definitely get to that. So let's hold on that thought for a second. But I kind of liked how the game wasn't very challenging, but I didn't like that the enemies also didn't really evolve at any given point. They either just were enemies that walked towards you a little faster, or some flying enemies that flew through.
Well, I mean, like, or threw things at you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought you meant threw you. Yeah. I was like, okay. What'd they throw at you? I forget.
I don't know what they were throwing.
The red guys, though, right?
Yeah, they were on trees. Yeah. And then there's another.
People throwing, like, things from the, like, bombs from the top of the trees down in, like, an arc.
And then in another level, there are frogs that, like, scream at you.
No, I think that's their tongue. I assume that was their tongue that they're, like, whipping their tongue
out. It looks disembodied
to me. It's disconnected, but it's like, have you ever played Chrono Trigger?
Yes.
The frog's tongue in that is also, like, a bunch of little beads that connect so it can, like, stretch. Yeah. So maybe that's why I thought of it as
Japanese frogs.
Japanese frogs.
That's what they're like over there.
Yeah. And the enemy variety, would have been nicer to see some more, like, different things, like, even just, like, enemies that, I don't know, like, their behavior gets a little smarter. They kind of just, like, the blue ones were the most frequent throughout the entirety of the game. Just walk in one direction and that's all, and, like, you know, they come at you. And I get that, like, that's what a Goomba does too in Mario, but at least Mario had the foresight to also be like, but then there's Koopa Troopers and there's red Koopa Troopers and there's Hammer Brothers. Like, we don't have enough of that in this game to justify it.
Right.
There was, and it's just a palette swap as far as enemy design, like, aesthetically, but I think there is another just mook that will stop in front of you so that you can't time things out quite as well.
Okay.
And then you have to be a little bit more aggressive, but that's very minuscule.
So you're working your way through seven scenes in the game, basically seven stages, and there's a nice overworld map. I'd give that some credit, right?
It's a couple clip arts, yeah.
But it's an unnecessary. I always feel like an overworld map that you have no control over. I mean, it's pretty, I guess, but, like, an overworld map gets me excited that I'm going to be in some control over where I go next.
This, I know, but this did the same thing for me that maybe, like, what Castlevania's.
Yeah,
did.
I guess
you know,
that's
it's just
true,
like, it helps give
true.
It at least, like, a sense of place rather than just, like, why did I move from the forest to the desert? Like, at least now you can see.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I guess. But Castlevania also had, you had, like, a clear goal, and you're seeing this one big castle. Maybe I'm misremembering what it looked like in this game, but feel like I was just like, oh, now I'm in that side of the map.
Well, in this game, it is actually, now that you bring it up, it is confusing because you just go around the outside like you make an N.
It's like, where is my goal?
Right,
where am I trying to get?
You make the letter N around the outside, and then you go into the middle. It's like, why couldn't I just make a straight line? Why did I have to go over and then
maybe you're searching each of these areas for your girlfriend.
And you're like, well, she's not in here. Maybe she's in the big tower in the middle of the world map.
So when you guys were going through, did you get any of the bells? Because I'm a little confused on what one of them does.
Well, the thing is with the bells is that when you read the manual, it's described as something that's going to happen like fairly often. Right. Like you know, I'm thinking like the bells from Stinger, you know, like those, because they look the same too visually.
Because the one bell that is like protects you, there's a bell that you get and it makes these circles around you, and they help attack enemies. And it's actually pretty hard to get hit while you have this on. You can still get hit, but I think that it came up for me once.
Yeah,
and I feel like it comes
up
at the same spot one time in this entire game, and that's it. I could be wrong.
I had the same experience because I didn't. I saw one bell, singular.
Right.
So I don't know what the others do at all.
So the other bell, and I don't remember the color, so forgive me.
So it's silver and gold.
So silver, is that the shield?
Silver is that's the one that you'll find more frequently. It's by defeating all of like an entire squad of attack birds.
Right.
And that one, if you collect it, you have you can throw the star, the ninja star.
No, you mean you throw the sword.
Every time you swing your sword, you'll throw a star as well.
Oh,
okay, so I did get that one. That's right. I totally forgot that happened. Because I also read in the manual that there's a bell that you get that will kill an enemy somewhere else. Did I read that wrong?
Say that one more time.
Maybe I'm reading that wrong. But I thought after I played it, I was looking through the manual and said, like, this enemy or this bell will kill an enemy somewhere else. And I was like, what does that mean?
That's very ominous.
Make sure that I'm not making that up completely.
I do remember reading that in the manual and then never coming into contact with it in the game.
Yeah. But when I saw that, I had forgotten that I got the bell that gives you the throwing stars. So I was like, oh, maybe that's the other bell?
No,
but
the other bell is the gold bell. And that one is only in predetermined locations. So you have... It's like another one of those secret things of this game that is not communicated well to the player at all.
No.
You know how, like, here's my idea with you know, since we're talking so much about Super Mario Brothers, is that Super Mario Brothers has a lot of secrets. Some that are, sure, they're obscure, but there's also, like, some guiding,
you have to have, like, the littlest amount of curiosity to happen upon them.
Right. In this game, you have to, like, nothing is obvious about any of these secrets. And we'll talk about the secret areas in a second, but
I figured out the bell mystery.
Okay.
I solved it.
Love it.
So it does say in the manual, gold bells will kill enemies far away, which I realize
it's a
now
ranged
is talking
attack.
About. Yeah, it's a ranged attack.
So that's another really weird way to describe something.
Right. When I read it, I thought it was like somewhere in the level an enemy will die.
Right.
So that's not what happens.
Yes, the gold bell is the shield, though.
The gold bell, it says in the manual, will kill enemies far away, making me think the gold bell is the throwing star. And the silver bell, it says circles around and protects Kid Nicky.
You guys are both reading the manual. And
yeah, this is interesting.
Are you reading the manual?
I'm not reading the manual, but I'm reading the wiki, and I think that, like, I don't know. The wiki's
pretty
good.
At this point, like, I don't know who to trust more, the manual or the wiki.
That's funny. Who's right? Cast your vote at home. I think the bottom line is it doesn't matter because you're really not going to find too many of these. Anyway,
exactly.
So, and I don't know about you guys, but I didn't feel like they were necessary.
They weren't.
No. It was nice to have that shield one.
I guess I would have expected the power-ups to just be either more frequent or found easier than just like in predetermined locations or by killing the birds. Like, it seems like it should have been something that, like, you were killing the birds.
Can I mention another thing it says in the manual?
Yeah.
And I'm paraphrasing it because I put the manual down again. But something like, if you kill this bird, you can find golden bells, which it stole from the school.
The school.
So I don't know where this lore is coming from and why they don't want to, like, expound on it at all.
Slightly mad that you didn't include this in Tales from the Manual.
Like, but
a masked bird, in disguise trying to hide, he bears the golden bell that he stole from the school.
So funny.
Strange.
And also, those coins are only worth 500 points, so it's like, you don't need
them. Who cares?
And
I don't even look at points anyways.
Screw it. There's also the extra life and the princess doll. Yes. Did you guys see either one of these?
Again, these are in hidden places that I didn't find.
Okay. Yeah. The extra lives are only found in the secret bonus rooms.
Yeah.
The secret areas, as I'm referring to them. But you'll have to dig deep for that. But that makes sense. You know, an extra life's a big deal.
Yeah.
But we also gave one-ups. Pretty, you know, like that was easy to find in Super Mario Brothers every now and again.
Yeah, they just sort of popped up.
Yeah. And then the princess doll is an interesting one because it gives you basically like an extra hit.
Isn't that a gi? It's not a doll. It's a...
Does it say it's a gi in the manual? Do I have to get off the wiki?
It just says mini princess.
Because it changes your attire.
Yes, no, it changes your attire. Yes, that's true. But it's described as a princess doll.
Here. Oh, that's weird.
Yes. It doesn't really look like a princess, to be honest. But it doesn't look like a gi either. So I'm not prepared to give that battle up. But you get the new gi, and then your outfit turns white, and then in exchange, you can take one extra hit, which I think like this game should have had from the beginning. I hate one-hit games.
All these games are one-hit games.
I know,
games
and
now.
I get why they are, but I'm just saying, like, if when in doubt, just get, like, a ROM hack of these games where you can take a few hits, because it's just, that's the way these games should be played now. I'm serious. Who wants to get hit once, die, and then start from the beginning?
Mike, hardcore gamers.
Mike, yeah, real gamers.
I think it's funny that we kind of started out the podcast as almost purists in a way, and I'm just like, get a fucking ROM hack.
I don't know. I feel like then just don't play this game. I mean,
but I think some of these games can be fun with the right ROM hack. All I'm going to say is that I may or may not have played a ROM hack version of this game where you have, like, three hits, and then you die instead of one.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He really may or may not have.
That was a review copy.
Yeah, that was it. I got the review copy from Irem. We're on such good speaking terms since I continue to screw up which phrase they made. So much, too. All right, so we've talked about the regular enemies here. We've talked about the bells. Do we want to talk about the boss fights?
We should probably talk about the boss fights.
AKA the best part of the game?
Yes. It's the only good part of the game is the slightly inspired designs of these bosses. My favorite was probably the first, at least in the actual like visual of it, this giant-headed kid that, like, sneezes at you or something.
That's V.O., too.
His actual name is Death Breath.
Death Breath, okay.
Yeah, he has a gigantic head, and he does three different ways of attacking you. And it's like all of this work went in to making these bosses, and not a single extra enemy could be made with these kind of, like, thoughts in mind, like, specific to their stages, where, like, they do similar things, but on, like, a less threatening scale. I don't know. See, it's like confusing to me. It's like the bosses in this game are, I'm going to say it, pretty damn good. I had a lot of fun with most of them.
I will say, though, and this is what I referred to earlier, that I don't understand, and I actually found it kind of frustrating, that you have to go and retrieve your sword whenever you attack a boss.
Yes, I don't fault the bosses for that.
No. The bosses had nothing to do with how bad you are at swinging a spinning sword. But it almost made me feel like I was not hitting them, and this was the wrong way to fight.
I think you're not. I think it depends on the reaction from the boss.
Yeah, it'll give you like an ugh graphic, and he'll go backwards.
Right, there's also like certain bosses that are just like, they can only be hurt from a certain point something like, you know, like the witch who flies around. Third stage. She has a cape, and if you attack from the cape side, it does no damage.
Right.
You're sort of punishing the player for landing a hit by making him go and retrieve the goddamn sword. I know that it like makes it a little bit more of like a strategic thing because you want to hit him so that you can retrieve the sword quickly, but
it happens every time.
Yeah.
And it takes most of the time like 3 to 5 hits to kill most of these guys. And I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but meanwhile, you have no weapon in your hand, and you have to figure out a way to dodge the attacks that they're doing to you. And I get it, like, there's some strategy, but it'd be nice if that only happened on, like, the very last hit before you killed the boss, you know? Like, so you do the hit, and then finally, finally, now you don't have a weapon, and you have to go retrieve it. That'd be cool. Right. I'd be down for that, even if it happened in every single boss. There's also this weird thing, though, where, you know, because your sword just, like, ricochets wherever. So one time, my sword ricocheted all the way to, like, the top of the screen. And I'm like, how am I going to get that? So I go over to the edge of the screen and jump, and the game just teleports me to the sword, grabs it, and comes back down, and I'm like, oh, that's one way to solve it. Well, at least they tested.
That was where I was like, okay, that's kind of silly, but I was like, at least impressed, but I was like, hey, at least they didn't just let it be game-breaking.
Right.
Like, at least they knew that this was a problem.
He doesn't have a sword anymore.
But I'm still at a point, I think, in our nostalgia career where I'm, like, impressed by bosses having boss patterns. Because there's been so many that don't.
Yeah, this isn't... we haven't had that many.
No, we've had a couple, and like, I feel like I usually bring it up when we do, but...
when you think about what we just played before, Karate Kid,
right,
last week, and that game being essentially... Oh, the boss is coming up? Well, some of these guys will just straight up jump off the platform if I just wait over here.
Right, yeah.
You know, like, that level of dumb, it is really nice when you get to a boss like this, because what I really like about these bosses is that they have multiple attacks, they have tells for when it's a good time to attack them, and they have, like, movement around the stage that makes sense to their particular characters. So it's not like they just hang on the right side of the screen and you have to charge at them. There's like a, there's a good time to attack all of these guys. I think that's what makes them such great bosses. They almost feel like early Mega Man bosses.
Yeah.
You know?
I would say that.
Yeah. Not nearly as inventive.
No,
Mega
exactly.
Man bosses are obviously awesome.
This is a primordial version of good boss design.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
But I do think there were definitely flaws in the witch one that you said, where every time you hit this, I guess it's a witch, I don't even remember, I just remember something flying around. Every time you hit it, it splits into double of itself, you know?
Right.
And into smaller versions of itself. And I was like, that's a cool concept. Until... It's really, like, do you guys agree that was, like, the easiest boss by far? You just hit it six times and just hit them all. Like, they were, like, flying through me and not hitting me.
So it doesn't make it harder that there's more of them. It makes it easier to attack the ones that are directly in front of you.
And also, now that I'm thinking about it, did you lose your sword in that one? I remember kind of just going in, slashing away.
Actually,
and all,
you're right. I don't remember losing my sword in that boss battle.
Which, the losing your sword didn't bother me too much anyways, because I hadn't really thought about it too much, but...
Well, I definitely... Look, let me put it this way. I don't hate that it's in the game, but it's something that you notice that, like, every single time I hit one of these bosses, it goes flying, and it does become a bigger deal in the final stage.
Yes.
But we'll talk about that when we get there.
And again, it's just mixed messaging to the player of at least the first few times that you do it. It does not make sense that you've hit and you've lost your sword.
Right. Yeah, it is not clear until you kind of, like, figure it all out, but... But I will say that I think it was the fourth boss, which is like the centipede thing that's like going up and down, and you have to hit each like segment of it.
Mm-hmm.
That I think the gameplay. I mean, granted, there's other ways to make the gameplay more challenging, but I think that losing your sword every time helped the gameplay, because otherwise, I feel like it would have been very easy to just kill him all at once.
That's true.
And then one other thing I want to say about the losing your sword is that I guess it's the fifth boss then, is like the suit of armor holding like a spear above his head, or
stage six.
Six.
Five is the big baldy who screams at you.
Oh, fool, right?
Yeah,
he fool. Calls you a fool.
Yeah. He screams at you and you have to dodge his screams and commands. I liked that boss fight, but more of what I really liked about that stage were those giant Buddha statues.
The
in this game are pretty mediocre for the most part, but then I'm like, that's a pretty detailed
Buddha.
They
saved all of their art department for these like two Buddha statues in this one stage.
I mean, if you're going to do it for something, might as well do it for something that's like respectful, I guess, at least, right? Like,
I guess so.
but for the following boss... Well, first, I do want to mention that guy who yells fool at you, a cloud of what he's saying appears above you, and it says fool, and then this cloud of fool drops a bunch of little, like, letters, like F-O-O-Ls, on you.
It's cute.
That's what I kind of meant when I meant there's, like, some charm to this game.
Yeah.
But what did you guys think of that suit of armor guy holding the spear?
I didn't know what I was doing wrong.
Hated it because I couldn't tell like what I was doing, and eventually what I just came up with, I'm not even sure if this is the strategy, but I just made it so that he got as close to me as possible on the left side of the screen because he's in guard mode the entire time. I'd attack him, be able to pick up my sword right away because it would just deflect right to the end of the screen, and attack him again before he could go back into his guard stance.
And when you have to cheese the game, I mean, like, okay, so we're talking about good boss design. This was the dud.
So I gathered by the end, I thought that you had to hit him on the jump and hit him on top of the head, which was working for me.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I could be wrong. Maybe there's something else at play there. But the thing is, before I figured this out, I actually thought this was the coolest boss design until I realized what it really was. Because I thought what you're supposed to do, which is not true, is when you hit this boss, you know, your sword falls out and goes to the other end of the screen, but his spear also falls out and goes to the opposite end of the screen as your sword.
Not as far away, though.
Not as far away, but he scuttles back to get his spear while you have to run back and get your sword. And I thought the goal was to get him off of his end of the screen.
Oh.
But it would be like a constant race to like get to your sword and get back to him to keep knocking him back. Well, and I got him really close to off, but I don't think it's possible.
Right. No, apparently that is the idea. But essentially you want to get to a point where you'll be able to retrieve your sword faster than his.
Yes.
Right. But that's not what I thought it was.
I'm just saying, like, it doesn't matter anyway, because at the end of the day, the only way to really have that work is to cheese it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's
right.
Fun.
Yeah. That's fun, right? This one, I would say, like, I thought I was doing damage to him for a while, and then I realized, like, there's no way this boss takes, like, 13 hits to kill. And I realized I just wasn't doing anything yet. I haven't even started fighting him.
See, if they had gotten it to work that way, though, where you have to get him off of his end of the screen while having to go continuously retrieve your sword, I think that would have been a good, like, not finale, but a good payoff to the whole losing your sword gameplay mechanic.
Yeah,
it's like, this is like where I put what I learned to the test.
Yeah.
But not so.
What I learned about
dropping my sword and getting it.
It would have been, that's a good motif, though. I would have liked that, you know?
Getting back up.
Yeah, before we go to the final stage, stage 7, I'd like to talk about the secret areas. Did you guys experience any of those?
Nope.
I'm on my own.
I went to one of them only after I saw it happen in a Let's Player, and I'm trying to even remember what it was. I had to hit certain columns or something. I honestly don't even really remember.
My favorite one that I saw was, I think you have to accidentally die by like falling into water, and then you get eaten by like a sea monster of sorts, and then you were just in his stomach.
Yes, that's the best one. I was actually just about to mention that. Yes, you... You fall into the space between the island and the fish, and then you get transported into the belly of the fish. That was the secret area I was going to mention, because it's the most interesting, because you actually see, like, the skeleton, the what would you call it? The
Of the fish.
No, but it's not, like, necessarily the skeleton, it's the spine.
Yeah, the spine.
Yeah, sorry.
And it's just weird that they relegated their most interesting map design with, like, context and, like, not just random islands that you have to jump over, to these bonus areas, because even like I get you climb a tree,
which is just like not something I would have even done in the game. I never really thought about like scale the trees, like, you know, like when a vine pops up in Super Mario, it's like scale that vine.
Yeah.
Like, when a tree is just in the game, I'm not thinking like, oh yeah, Kid Nicky's known for climbing trees. Also, there's some other weird things, like in that same stage, if you just go to at the very beginning of the stage, you just go to the very left of the screen and squat for several seconds, you'll just be transported to a tunnel with a bunch of eggs in them, and then there's like a, not like a dinosaur, but like some kind of green worm thingy that looks like a dinosaur that like chases after you, and I'm like, I don't remember seeing him anywhere else in the game, so like, why is he also only in this secret area?
Yeah,
there's just so many things that they put into the secret area, like even in the Buddha stage, where there's like four different temples that you can go to as secret areas that have like cool power-ups and other neat things to pick up.
Maybe we're just not paying good enough attention. I don't know. I feel like they wouldn't have put this much effort into these areas if they didn't think that people could find them.
Okay, well, how about this one? Okay, this one you can only get to in the Famicom version.
Wow, they expected us to buy the Famicom version?
In this one, you go onto the giant Buddha statue that we all love so much that we thought was interesting, and you squat in the middle of its lap, and then you yell into the microphone that's in the Famicom controller, and then that will transport you to the bonus area where you'll get like some extra coins and princess dolls and extra lives. And
show
like,
the trailer for Silent Hills.
Yeah. That's really funny. They would have that in 1987. suspicious. So I think that like the verdict I'm getting from this is that the secret areas are awesome and very thoughtful, but like, geez, put them in like a
The means
put them
to
in
get
a manual or
not,
something.
Yeah.
Like, give us some hints on how to find these things. It's almost like they planned on selling you a DLC strategy guide, you know, like where you'd be able to download what content.
I knew what you meant.
It's more of a microtransaction, right? In that regard,
it's just a transaction.
I think it's just buying a strategy guide.
A macro transaction.
Capital.
Even if they didn't have like a hint to get to it, like make it discoverable in the game. Like make it. I mean, I guess hints within the game. Like, you know, it just seems. It all seems so random. Who would ever? I mean, talking about the Famicom version, who would ever squat down in that specific spot and then yell into their microphone?
I could see myself squatting down in Buddha's lap, but I can't see myself like then making a loud noise.
Unless you were like, hey, check it out. Like, Jimmy, come over and look at what I'm doing. And the microphone picks it up.
So we get to the final stage, stage 7, which is actually not the final stage, but you know, we'll talk about this in a second. You get to the final stage, and am I crazy or did this game just get really hard?
There's a little bit of a it got hard.
I don't want to say like Ghost and Goblins hard,
but harder than it's been.
Harder than the rest of the game completely, and I'm just like, what's happening all of a sudden? Like, what's going on? And then you get to the Stone Wizard, and it's not so bad, but it's a pretty tough boss fight. I'm definitely not expecting there to be a whole nother stage after him.
Level where there's all the things in the sky that I'll dive bomb down at you like just over and over again?
Birds?
No,
you're thinking. I know what you're thinking of.
They got spear. That's the next level.
Next level is when you're on top of the roofs. In this one, you're walking through like the Japanese houses. Yeah.
So this level, I'm showing Mike.
Showing it to you.
Viewers of our podcast, can you see this? Because this level I thought was tough at first, but then apparently if you just run, none of those things that are dive bombing you will hit you, and you just run.
I guess
and
I
just
never
don't
thought
stop.
To me, the guy who runs through most games, I never thought to do that in this one.
Like if you stop, you screw up the timing of it, and then you have to defend yourself.
That's funny.
But yeah, I did think that like overall the rest of the stage was more difficult, especially the boss.
Yeah, and then so you get to the Stone Wizard, who's the final boss. Any thoughts?
It's just strange that you have this showdown with your girlfriend present, and then you defeat him, and then he runs away, and you have to keep doing that. I guess it's like, oh, there's more content.
I guess you got to make sure he's dead, right? Like he just kidnapped your princess. I'm pretty sure you want to make sure that he doesn't
like,
do it
it's
again.
It's a revenge story.
It's almost like if at the end of Super Mario Brothers, well, I don't know what else Mario would have done. He literally set Bowser in a pool of lava. So I'm not sure. But like, you know, it's almost like if he would have like put on gear and went down there and then done like a lava level where he has to like make sure Bowser's officially dead.
And then there's no Super Mario Brothers games ever again.
Yeah, right? Like he never like sees it through. In fact, in the latest Mario games, like think about Odyssey, right? A little slight spoiler here, but like it ends with Mario and Bowser just stuck on the moon. And I'm like, wouldn't that be a good time to just make sure Bowser stays on the moon? Sorry for being like that, Bowser, but Bowser's a cool guy. I wish he'd keep showing up.
Do you guys have this thing happen when you were fighting? This, first of all, what are you calling this? The Stone Wizard?
The Stone Wizard.
He's a Stone Wizard.
Doesn't look like a Stone Wizard to me. But
he's a Stoned Wizard.
Right
on.
But did the Stone Wizard he's throwing fire, right? Pillars of fire come up, and that's kind of like your biggest obstacle in this fight.
Stone fire.
But then for me, like after like the first hit, he just stopped throwing the fire, and then there were no attacks.
No.
Yeah.
That wasn't my copy of the game.
Maybe I shouldn't say after the first hit, but after a few hits. It was very tough until he stopped, and I was like,
there's definitely a window of opportunity to attack this guy.
It was a good amount of time. I was like, is he going to attack again?
Do you think the Kid Nicky is haunted?
Oh,
could be.
It's not.
IRAM.
You've been doing this episode for too long now. You're losing it. Let's stay focused.
Sorry.
We have to just finish because after you defeat the Stone Wizard, it's like a total psych out. You go to stage 8 where you fight him on the roof like 9 times, right?
Yeah, like, this is the level I thought where it was like, nah, this is really hard.
This is just ridiculous because you have to do the boss fight that you just did that usually is like the end of a level. You do that, I'm pretty sure 9's an exaggeration, but at least 5,
yeah,
right?
I think so. Like,
and then at
five.
The end, he turns into a bat, and then you got to fight him in his bat form, which is described as his ultimate form. But I'm also like, why? Like, he's not really any more intimidating.
You were a giant wizard made out of stone.
Stone wizard.
Now you're a bat. That's your ultimate form.
You were interpreting that as that he's made out of stone?
I don't know. You guys call him the Stone Wizard. I just went along
using
with that.
The name he was given.
Is it on the wiki or in the manual?
The manual.
It's in the manual. Okay. His birth name, Stone. I'll call him Stone Wizard.
Wizard's his last name.
All right, so you get to the final version of the Stone Wizard after all this other crazy stuff. And by the way, I should mention that it's not the same boss fight on loop. There's some times where he does things with bubbles.
Oh yeah, bubbles.
He does that thing, and then
I dislike bubbles.
Yeah, keep going.
It kind of felt like it was like a little bit of like, you get a little, with each boss fight in this, you get a little taste of a previous level. Like the bubbles were in an earlier level. So it's like, oh, you're fighting him, but now that thing from that level 3 is there or whatever. And I don't know if that holds up for the other ones, but
it's
I feel that. A different thing.
Yeah.
That's nice of you to say about this game. But I think this is, let me put it this way.
I'm just throwing them bones now. I'm like, you know what? They try.
Let me put it this way. As frustrating as this is, because it's like at this point, you just want to be done with the game. Like, look, it wasn't very challenging. All of a sudden, it's very challenging. And you have to deal with a boss fight several times over. It's nice that they thought to include like this epic boss fight at the end where it's like form after form after form. But I'm just like, yo, I already saved the princess in the previous
stage. Go back home. Go dojo training.
Exactly. That's how I'm feeling. And so I'm kind of exhausted.
Just put locks on the doors.
By the time he turns into a bat, I'm not even convinced that's his last form. I'm like, oh, he's going to turn into a dragon next, you know?
Bat dragon.
But he doesn't. He does these giant flames, though, with faces on them. It's pretty cool. and you just have to keep attacking him, and then he dies, and that's the...
That's the end of the game.
That's the end of the game.
I think we can move on.
Yeah,
I have one stray thought. I did like that there were words of encouragement after you beat bosses. It would just be like, you know, attaboy.
Okay.
That's my stray thought.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that. You're right. That's my favorite thing. Sorry.
I just reacted to you like you were an idiot, quick.
Because I was thinking about something. But now that I'm thinking about this, I did think that was like the weirdest part of this whole game was that it would say like radical dude, and then you'd get the scroll and it would be like attaboy, and I'm like, what am I playing? Like, it feels like they just Americanized it all of a sudden. You know, you're again feudal Japan, and then all of a sudden it's just like, oh, you know, get the scroll before you gotta go to class. Like,
so I'm just getting confused here. I don't remember the bat form at all.
Okay. That's strange.
I'm trying to remember.
See, you know what? I wasn't going to say anything because I thought maybe I forgot, but
it,
I don't remember it either.
I was like scrubbing through it now, and
you
I can't
think
find
it's
it.
A bat, but that's it.
But he's standing right there.
Yeah, but that's him too.
Oh,
clearly,
yeah,
that's him.
Okay.
You don't think that's him? Like,
I guess it's him.
He's this wizard.
It's him, Mike.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying, like, it is actually his hair and his face and his makeup. It's everything of him. And yes, you can't really tell it's a bat, but like it does, he has like these little flappy arms.
So you're still fighting, to be clear, then you're still fighting him. He's still standing there, but now like another little flying version of him.
I thought that
was
like his
like,
friend.
Could be.
Anyway.
But it's like the same color palette and everything, but like I totally forgot about that
For
thing.
What it's worth, in the arcade version, it's more like...
Just demons.
You know, it's like it's better, I guess, pronounced.
Gotcha.
That you're dealing with the bat.
Okay.
In this game, I guess I was just, you know, I guess you could assume it's also just like a mini version of himself with just a floating head.
Yeah.
Because the arms aren't necessarily apparent.
You are witnessing a breakdown of communication between all three of us.
Yep. Because it's funny is we all beat this game, I want to say, right?
Yeah, we beat. Yes. Yeah.
We all beat this game and we're all having very different experiences.
Different memories about this game.
Well, here's the thing. What does that really say about this game, though, in terms of how memorable it is? If three people beat it and barely remember, like, the final boss fights, forms, and things, it was like, at that point, I just wanted to be done.
I was thinking about pizza.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because you're a Ninja Turtle.
Yeah.
But but when you beat this game, you get another nice message. Can I read
yeah,
this
please
message?
Please read the message.
Thanks to your awesome ninja skills, peace has been returned to our castle once again. We will remember you forever, Kid Nikki. You are one rad dude.
See, it's so nice.
It's sweet.
Are you a rad enough dude to save the president?
Yeah, rad is just really, really played up.
Yeah. Well, it's on the title of the box. So
and you know what?
Hope.
And I'm just watching the ending of this on YouTube right now. But then the end comes flying in from the corner. It's all small and it gets bigger.
It's better
colors,
than game over.
Color curtains come in. It's a whole cutscene. It's a lot of thought into that ending.
It's got charisma.
Yes.
Cool. Are we good?
I think we're good.
I have one more stray thought.
My right. God.
Related to pausing the game.
Great. I love a good pause.
You know,
tangent.
Every couple episodes, I like to put the pause in there. It's not really about the sound of pausing the game. It's about when you pause this game and when you unpause it, the music starts over. Do you guys notice it? The music starts at the beginning.
Nope.
So every time you pause it, it starts with like the intro music to the level again. I just figured that was a good little stray thought to add to the Joe's Pause Sounds archives.
The compendium.
Yes.
Yeah, that's actually good to know. This is actually like a controversy that's happening right now in Final Fantasy IX on Nintendo Switch and Steam, where every single time you're in the overworld, you hear the music. When you go to a boss fight and you come out of, or not a boss fight, when you go to any kind of random encounter, and you come back, it starts the song all over again from the beginning. So nobody's able to hear, like,
two minutes into the
track or whatever. And I'm like, you know, this is a problem that has been going on since 87.
Tearing the community apart.
What's funny is like, it can't be that hard to fix, right? Why don't they just fix it? They fixed it for Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe by the time this episode publishes, they'll have fixed it. Computer gaming world called Kid Nikki yet another in the seemingly endless parade of horizontally scrolling, running, jumping, shooting games for the NES. While the reviewer stated that those who enjoyed such games would like the game, he wondered how many of these interchangeable games Nintendo will authorize. Even devotees must be getting tired. He wrote that was written in Computer Gaming World when this game came out. Like, that was an original review.
He was in for a treat.
Right. Yeah. If he's feeling tired already, that's crazy. Because I'm not necessarily, like, I'm thinking about it. We haven't had that many horizontally scrolling, running, jumping, shooting games.
That's the name of the genre.
That's the genre, according to him. But I'm like, I'm much more tired of the shmups at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Me too.
There won't be one soon, right?
No, there's one next week.
Oh, okay.
Do I have news for you, boy? Joe, I think you had one more stray thought for us.
I do. And this is another thing I should have put in the Tales from the Manual section, but I legitimately didn't notice this until just now. Underneath all your bonus items section, there's a section called Secret Techniques. And I'm just going to read you the two secret techniques in this game. Quick jumping techniques. There are many hidden dangers where you need to jump quickly. For example, when Kid Nikki is on the rock, he must jump right away to avoid danger while the rock is moving up and down. That's a secret technique. Jump off the rock quickly.
Well, I mean, it's information.
Here's another secret technique. Stabbing technique. when fighting a big boss, you may lose your sword. Be quick to pick it up again. That's the stabbing technique. What does this mean?
Those are almost like parts of a walkthrough that just somehow made it into the manual. Like, they feel so... Like, also, right. The rocks, like,
that's
what
just
stage?
Advice,
like,
first of all. That you have to do that stuff. Those are not secret techniques. Yeah. And that, there's no stabbing in that technique.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, thank God that this manual has been archived and is still around, because it's filled with lovely things.
It's a gift that keeps on giving, because Joe continues to go back to it. He keeps finding
it's
new
funny.
Things.
I like looked at the manual at the beginning of this episode, and I've just been like... I've just been obsessed with the manual for the whole episode, like finding all these new things.
Sean, I don't think we heard you, but did you say it's under Joe's pillow?
You know, it's like I heard you but didn't like register until...
No, they probably still didn't hear me because you guys laughed during the pillow, so like, collectively. It's time to go into sequels and spinoffs.
No,
you
I
know,
thought it was almost over.
You know Kid Nicky has sequels and spinoffs. In Japan, two sequels appeared on the Famicom. The first... was, and they go under their Japanese name, which I'm just going to butcher here, but it's like Kaiketsu Yanamucharo 2 Kaikori Land. and that's just basically Kid Nicky 2 Karakuri Land. Okay. And
perfect.
It came out in 1991. We won't get it. It's a Japan only game. And the second in 1993, so very late into the NES's lifespan, we just get Kid Nicky 3. But obviously with the original Japanese name that I'm not going to try to butcher anymore.
Kid Nick 3.
Yeah. Each of the three NES games have radically different character designs. You'll notice the radically there. very cool. Radical. Thank you. I think that's funny. And there was also a Game Boy sequel.
Wow.
Called Ganzo Yanchamoru.
Yanchamoru.
And that's 1991 as well. But it's actually... like a standalone game. It's not a port of any of the Kid Nicky games. So if you're into the Kid Nicky franchise, especially the second and third Japanese exclusive ones, and you haven't checked out the Game Boy game, you might want to check it out.
Essential.
Yep. Speaking of essential, Sean, I think we should go into our essential games list. So we've talked at length here about Kid Nicky. I don't need detailed reasoning, but if you have it, I'll take it. But let's hear your guys' votes. Sean, you first.
I'm just going to reiterate my first impression, where I really like some of the charm that it exudes. The sense of humor is cool, especially in parts that most people will never play. But precisely because of that reason, and because the actual action is kind of blasé to me, save for the boss battles, it's not essential.
Cool. Joe?
Like I said, this is not as, like, painful as Karate Kid was. So, you know, it's a playable game. I can say that about it. And the bosses are interesting, but nothing there is, like, a must. And, in fact, a lot of it is, like, frustrating enough to definitely keep it off the essential games list.
All right. And I'll just add that I do not think that this game is essential. But I also don't know if I'd say play it. We talked about this game at length, and we all three of us beat it. I'm not necessarily certain that means that you have to play it. If you've liked what we've been talking about and you're interested in like some cool bosses and early NES games, I think like that's a very niche thing that you're into. But go ahead, play this game. Otherwise, there isn't enough variety in what's going on here in music, in gameplay, in level design.
Music's fine, but repetitive.
Yes, yeah. The music track that's in there is pretty cool, but like it just repeats itself for like three stages and then changes and repeats itself for three stages. Yeah.
And then if you pause it, it starts from the beginning again.
Yeah, and that's crazy. So there's just like little things like that irk me about this game, but it's also just not a very challenging game. And then all of a sudden steps it up to, in my opinion, like WTF level at the end. But you can still beat it, so I guess it's not like I said, it's not Ghosts and Goblins hard. But... the art's mediocre. There's some cool Buddha statues. You've heard all this before. I think you know where you stand now, whether you want to play this game or not. But I go on to nostalgiacast.com and I put in whether I think games are essential, play it, or skip it. And I'm kind of saying that this one's probably a skip it on that list. So thank you for listening to about 50 minutes of us talking about it.
Yeah.
Definitely pick up the manual, though.
Yeah, pick up the manual at your Barnes & Noble or Borders gift store.
But I think if you've listened to our episode, you've known enough now, and you probably don't have to play it. But at the same time, if you've listened this much, you might as well just play it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you got to figure out whether Joe or Mike was right about such and such, or if we're misremembering the entire game.
Right. Was there a bat?
Right.
We don't know.
No, there was a bat. I guarantee it. I guarantee you there was a bat. We are not that bad, people. One last thing I'll say is that if you use a turbo controller button, like if you have that on your controller, it doesn't work here. The turbo button works so fast that your sword doesn't register with opponents.
Aww.
So you won't be able to kill any enemies with your turbo thing. It's a short game. Yeah, it's still a chore to work through. There's Attaboy and Radical Dude, so that's worth something.
You
to
can
some
reach
people.
Us at contact. At, no, you can reach us at nostalgiacast
@gmail.com. Or use the contact form at www.nostalgiacast.com. I'm Michael Esposito. You can find me on @EspositoFilm on Twitter, and we will talk to you soon.